First, some announcements. As you know, the amount of matter we still have to cover is more than we will have class time for. As a consequence, we have combined two chapters in the book Christianity and Conflict for today's session. What I thought I would do also is spend some time in the document of the Holy Father on the Gospel of Life, but then devote more time to our reflections on comparing Catholicism and Protestantism. You should have received several printouts, a copy of Devotion to the Poor Souls, which is still the month of November. Moreover, we will use this in class for the next session because, as you know, in Protestantism, they do not believe in purgatory. Again, a printout of the legitimacy of capital punishment, which I did at the request of the Missionaries of Charity in India. In any case, as we know, the Holy Father, in his document, the Gospel of Life, says he's encouraged by at least some of those who are against capital punishment, by their desire to keep even criminals alive. And there's been a great deal, I think, of misunderstanding, as though the Catholic Church has all of a sudden reversed her 2,000 years of history on the legitimacy of capital punishment. We will not cover this matter in class, but I ask all of you to please read this printout on legitimacy of capital punishment. Then I have assembled two charts covering the two chapters covering the two chapters that are part of the course on comparing Catholicism and Protestantism. But before we start class, that is formally, I thought I would share with you and ask your prayers. I was in Huntington, West Virginia over the weekend, came back late last night. I was giving a program for eternal life in the Church of the Holy Family in Ashland, Kentucky. I was on my way to the airport when a young woman stopped and asked me for prayers. Since it is all public now, embarrassing the public, she has no objections to my speaking about it. She became pregnant out of wedlock. She thought the man would marry her. He decided He would not marry her. And he insisted that she have an abortion. She refused. The child was given out for adoption. But the father of the child now used by the abortionists. He is now suing the mother and her mother, and I'm quoting the figure exactly, for $63 million. In other words, the abortionists now want to make adoption contrary to American law. Her name, which she gave me, is Ann Conaty, C-O-N-A-T-Y. Her last name is Selvaggi, S-E-L-V-A-G-G-I. Her trial was last week and will be all this week. This coming Wednesday, as some of you know, on Wednesday evenings when I'm in Detroit, we have class from 7 to 8:30 and followed by Mass at 8:30. Since I have 6:30 Mass at the parish church in Jesu, I then celebrate a second Mass. I promised Anne I would offer Mass on Wednesday at 8:30 in Grosse Pointe for her, and of course the success of her trial defending herself against the law. She now wants to make adoption illegal in the United States. In others, abortion instead of adoption. You can attend the Mass. You are welcome. It'll be at 8:30 this Wednesday evening at the home of Carol West. Does somebody know the address by heart? I know it's on Neff Street, N-E-F-F. Please?
576.
Can you, did you hear the?
Yes. Okay.
The Mass will be then at 8:30 this evening.
She has a papal flag outside of her house.
Yeah, there's a papal flag also outside the house. There's a chapel there. And class will be at 7. It's on the divine attributes. And then 8:30 will be Mass. She asked for prayers, I promised, to myself. During this week, the trial should end this week. I thought it was something we should both pray about and be concerned about. Because in our country, murder is now not just legalized, but I would say legislated. And now our treatment. If you have your printouts for the Catechism on the Gospel of Life, there was no way, given my schedule in the last 2 weeks, that I could continue as of today to provide you with more questions and answers. I assure you, You'll get your supply of questions and answers for the next class. In any case, you'll notice questions 120 and 121 on the death penalty or capital punishment. I'm asking you to read the manuscript on the church's teaching on the legitimacy of capital punishment. However, I want to especially share with you questions 123 and what follows. Question 123 reads, does Pope John Paul II affirm the great sinfulness of abortion? And the answer is, he does. However, this is, I think, of grave importance. Nowadays, you can read in so many professedly Catholic writers that the Church never teaches anything infallibly in the moral order. Let me backtrack. We know the Church does teach infallible, we call it irreversible doctrine, the Trinity of persons in God, the divinity of Jesus Christ, the virginity of Our Lady, the seven sacraments, the real presence of Christ in the Holy Eucharist, are all infallible doctrines of the Catholic Church. But what a growing number of, I repeat, professedly Catholic theologians are saying is that there is no infallible teaching on moral matters. In other words, that all the infallibility of the Church's teaching has to do with doctrine which is to be believed and does not apply to doctrines indeed, but which are to be lived, put into practice. It's on these grounds that, sadly, our American bishops in 1968, after Pope Paul VI issued Humanae Vitae, they called a special meeting, the bishops did, at which they stood in judgment, as we've said, on Pope Paul VI and declared, thanks, Holy Father, thanks. But the faithful can follow their own conscience. As though the Church's teaching on contraception is not infallible doctrine. Is it? It is infallible. Now the subject of abortion. For 4 years, while organizing the Catholic Home Study Institute in Virginia, I lived at Georgetown University. One of my Jesuit confreres at the university was the Jesuit priest who was a member of Congress for 10 years. Remember? Father Drinan. Congressman Hyde told me, your Father Drinan always appeared in Congress in his clerics, always. And for 10 years, he voted a straight pro-abortion ticket. How was your father doing after 4 years at Georgetown University? Needless to say, I did all that I could to, shall I say it, convert Father Dwinan. And one of the wonderful things that the present Pope did, he told our Jesuit general, remove Father Dwinan from Congress immediately. Thank God our Jesuit general obeyed. Is the Church's teaching on abortion being a murder, is that infallible doctrine? Yes. And that's now backtracking to 122. Can we say that the Church's teaching on abortion as murder is an infallible and therefore irreversible doctrine of the Catholic faith? Yes. And it's here. I cannot tell you how crucially important this is. It is here, and be as clear in your thinking as I hope I will help you to be. And I'd appreciate questions. By the way, the class today is not shortchanged. Go to 4:15, submit all the questions you want, and we'll answer questions as long as there's anybody here to listen. Be sure you know that there are two ways in which the Catholic Church teaches infallible doctrine. As we know, the Church teaches infallibly in two ways. She first teaches infallibly when the Bishop of Rome, either alone or through a general council of the Church, solemnly defines a doctrine of faith and morals to be binding on the consciences of all the faithful. Name some doctrines that, over the centuries, the popes have defined infallibly. In 1950, Our Lady's bodily assumption. In 1854, Our Lady's Immaculate Conception. And then, in the 16th century, at the Council of Trent, the Church defined, it was the Council of Trent, but backed by the bishops of Rome, they defined there are seven sacraments. They defined that among the sacraments is the sacrament of marriage. Before my ordination, when I was studying theology, a professor in moral theology told us the single most devastating teaching of Protestantism was and is the denial that marriage has been elevated by Christ as a sacrament. The Church, therefore, believes many doctrines infallibly, where the Pope, either on his own authority, without a council, or with the help of a council, but the Pope always stands above the council, declared to be unchangeable, infallible. However, we continue. The Church also teaches infallibly when all the bishops in communion with the Bishop of Rome agree on some doctrine of belief, that's faith or morality. The grave sinfulness of abortion is infallibly true on the second grounds that we've just explained. In diocese after diocese, in seminary after seminary, professor de Catholic. The young men study for the priesthood are taught, so many. Now, the only infallible teaching of the Catholic Church is that which the Pope himself solemnly defines, as we've said before, either alone or in confirming the teaching of a general council. That is emphatically untrue. And behind that untruth, in my judgment, is the main reason for the crisis in the Catholic Church. Because if contraception or here abortion, condemned by the Church as grave sins, if the Church's teaching in these most serious matters is not infallible, then it's no wonder we'd have a Jesuit priest sitting in the seats of Congress, and for 10 years, supporting abortion. In other words, the Church's teaching on both contraception and abortion is irreversible. So then 123, where we began, now is so crucial. Does Pope John, Paul II, affirm the grave sinfulness of abortion? Yes. He makes the affirmation in very explicit terms, which may be considered a formal definition. He says, and I quote, "If this is not a definition, then my knowledge of theology is not above the kindergarten level. By the authority which Christ conferred upon Peter and his successors, and in communion with the bishops of the Catholic Church, I confirm that the direct and voluntary killing of an innocent human being is always gravely immoral." But notice the verb. I confirm. What's the Pope saying? He is confirming the universal teaching of the Catholic hierarchy for almost 2,000 years on the grave sinfulness of abortion as a murder. This doctrine, the Pope continues, he is always gravely immoral, based upon that unwritten law which man, in the light of reason, finds in his own heart, is reaffirmed by sacred scripture, transmitted by the tradition of the Church, and taught by the ordinary and universal magisterium. The crucial words are the end of that sentence, ordinary and universal magisterium. Magisterium, as we know, is the teaching authority of the Church. That's what magisterium means, teaching authority. Ordinary teaching authority means the Church's teaching through the successors of the apostles, namely the bishops. It is ordinary in three ways. It is ordinary because those who teach it have been ordained to the fullness of the priesthood, namely the episcopate. Secondly, it is ordinary when it is taught by the bishops, but in union with the Bishop of Rome. It is thoroughly ordinary when it is binding on the people who call themselves Christians and Catholics. But the next adjective is critical. The ordinary and universal magisterium. Do bishops teach? Are they supposed to teach the faithful? The Catholic faith. Of course. However, their teaching, though ordinary as just explained, is universal and ordinary when one of two conditions is fulfilled. When either this teaching is universal because it had been taught from apostolic times to the present day, what we call historic universality. In other words, when the Bishop of the Catholic Church for now almost 2,000 years has successors of the apostles continuously, uninterruptedly, have taught a given doctrine, that doctrine, because it is, watch it, because it is ordinary, taught by the bishops, and universal, is always infallible. Does it have to be defined? No. No. And most of the church's teaching, which is infallible indeed, has not been defined. Most of the definitions of the church over the centuries have been occasioned by heresies. But if the Pope had to, shall I say, sit down and write out formal definitions condemning every heresy, he'd be doing nothing else, I'm not exaggerating, 7 days a week, 12 hours a day. There's no limit to the capacity of the human mind to conjure up error. So, if something has been taught with a historic universality over the centuries, that doctrine is infallible. But secondly, there is, besides what we call historic universality, also the universality of present teaching of all the bishops in communion with Rome. Another name for this, unlike historic universality, the term that I have used over the years is geographic universality. In other words, if either all the bishops over the centuries in communion with Rome have taught a particular doctrine, that doctrine ipso facto is infallible with no definition. So too, if a given doctrine is now geographically taught by all the bishops, but, get the phrase, in communion with the Bishop of Rome, that doctrine too is assured infallibility. Is abortion as gravely sinful? Is that doctrine infallible? Yes. on both grounds, both because the bishops of the Catholic Church over the centuries in communion with Rome have, in historic continuity, always condemned abortion as a grave sin, and because all the bishops now, in communion with the Bishop of Rome, teach that abortion is a grave crime. Question 125. What is a popular view of abortion today? Even as I read these words, quoting from Second Vatican, teaching that abortion, along with infanticide, is or are an unspeakable crime. As I read this, then I go to the Detroit telephone directory, the Yellow Pages. What comes first? A, B. Page after page. The only marvel is that you and I can sit here quietly, shall I say calmly, and blink our eyes and ask ourselves, what country am I living in? Is this the planet Earth, or is it hell? Talk about being mesmerized. Even to talk about a popular view of abortion, why do we have to use that language? Millions in our country, God knows how guilty they are, do not consider abortion. I don't say a crime, even contrary to sound and sane thinking. What then is this popular view? In many people's consciences, the gravity of abortion has been obscured. Abortion is being accepted in the popular mind. This reflects a dangerous crisis of the moral sense. People are increasingly unable to distinguish between good and evil, even on such a fundamental right as human life. That is why now the abortionists have organized in order to get abortion not merely permissible but mandatory, as it is, by the way, for the 1 billion people in communist China. Did you know that? And our Madam President at the Beijing conference was a shining light of women's rights, including, dear God, the right to murder. If I had no other reason for coming to Ann Arbor, and you're, thank God, be here too? The answer to 125 would be another reason. In the light of his moral blindness, what is our duty as believing Christians? Our duty is clear. We must now, more than ever, have the courage to look the truth in the eye. We must call things by their proper name. We may not yield to convenient compromise or the temptation to self-deception. And what the church in our country, not only, but surely in our nation, needs is men and women who have the courage of their convictions. And let me tell you, the price is high. You believe as a Catholic, and as Christ tells us, and you profess his name to the world. What you as a Catholic believe, and you're going to pay for it. 25 years, as I keep repeating, in working with the Holy See, has taught me volumes that I will never publish. The single greatest need in our country is for Catholics, Catholic bishops, Catholic priests, Catholic religious, Catholic fathers and mothers, Catholic men and women, who are both convinced in mind of what Christ taught and have the courage of their convictions and profess those convictions to the world in which they live. I don't normally read the daily papers, but since part of my job is defending the faith, I've got to know what the opposition says. And the Detroit papers are a wonderful source for telling me what the opposition holds. The business section of, shall I say, our daily paper just so distressed because AT&T is in financial trial. As soon as I read that, I said a Hail Mary of thanks. One of the largest financial backers, of the pro-abortion movement is AT&T. And yet, our telephones, right? I did everything in my power when I got in my office in the grotto, everything to protect myself from having to ask mercy from the Lord every time I make a telephone call. And this courage is not just flexing our muscles or gritting our teeth. Now you notice on page 69 of my notes, I've got great big print. Help me see. But question 126. Talk about the devil being a liar. They don't even speak. Well, imagine an abortionist speaking of his trade as being in the trade of murder. They speak of interrupted pregnancy. A mortuary, I like that term. It's so close to a mortuary. Call women's health services, birth control and family planning, woman care, women's clinic, physician's abortion services, problem pregnancy center, or pregnancy counseling centers, all, by the way, taken from the Yellow Pages. Their ads are on the first Yellow Pages of all the telephone directories of the United States. Their services, they promise, are confidential counseling, walk-in pregnancy tests, immediate appointments, 24-hour answering service, follow-up care, teenage counseling and care, reduced student rates, same-day procedures, free pain medication, warm atmosphere, and no waiting. All of this, I did not use quotation marks. Every one of those passages is, again, from the Yellow Pages. And Americans have been deceived. This Pope, I'm confident, will go down as one of the great bishops of Rome, of the Church's history. Who are the responsible agents for these crimes? And hear it. They are, first of all, the mother who may be led to have an abortion to protect certain values, such as her own health or a decent standard of living. Sometimes she fears that the child would be born in such conditions better if the birth had not taken place. No matter how serious or tragic the reasons, they can never justify the deliberate killing of an innocent human being. As a priest, I've had more than my share in counseling women, either in marriage or outside of marriage, who are planning abortions. Now, if the mother is the first responsible agent, the Pope asks, are there others? Yes. It is, first of all, the father of the child who may either pressure the woman to have an abortion or at least encourages such a decision. There's the woman that I've asked you to pray for, even under now post factum, a major lawsuit, which she tells me, is now in all the major papers of the United States. Members of the family of either the mother or father or so-called friends can apply strong pressure to make the woman feel psychologically forced to have an abortion. The doctors and nurses are gravely guilty when they place at the service of death the services which they have acquired for promoting life. What medical doctor can we trust anymore? Friends of mine, the medical profession have left medicine. And not a few, they told me, because of the strong pressures to support and encourage abortion. One medical school after another now teaches abortion, and they tell me you don't get an MD degree from more than one university unless you have first killed an unborn child. These are not ordinary days. And then, one final question before we leave this section and go on to our other second course. Are legislators also responsible for the crimes of abortion? Yes, they are gravely responsible for promoting and approving abortion laws.